Game face.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Video Game Logic. Today's episode was recorded on March the 19th, 2024. I'm your host, Game Psychologist, and with me, as always, with no fancy moniker this week because my mind drew a blank.
Caffeine rage. Gee, thanks.
On today's show, we will discussing some games that we played. From Asteroids to Guitar Hero World, Video Game Hall of Fame finalists draw from four decades. And we've got a lot of things coming from our community corner. Apex Legends streamers surprised to find an aimbot and other hacks added to their PC in the middle of major competition. Skull and Bones looks like it's doing worse than Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. EA to lay off 5% of its workforce. Taryn Adams says what we're all thinking. Warner Brothers has some news articles. In total, we've got, I think, six or seven that we combined down to four, because you guys sent us many things, and it's been a busy week. Anyways, hello, Rage. I love you.
Well, it's also a couple weeks, because shit went down last week.
Yep. My in-laws were here, and we were going to record, and then some things went wrong that I did not record discussing what went wrong, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah. As I'm trying to adjust my recording volume just a little, but when it gets normalized, it's not going to really appear to be all that different.
Hopefully. Yay. Timestamps will appear in the show notes, probably following their respective topics. Love you. Hello, Rage.
Bad touch.
Good touch. All the good touches. Touch, touch, touch. Squeeze. Pat.
I feel violated.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, now you're going to have to mortgage your property to pay for the settlement.
Oh. Trump reference. The question is, to which one? I mean, I'm guessing you're talking about the big case, but there are several cases where he's been ordered to pay settlements out recently, so.
I'm talking about the New York tax evasion?
Yeah, the $495 million.
Yeah. Oh.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. Set your calendars because next Monday, properties may be seized.
That would be just chef's kiss. Would love to see it.
But yeah, we're way off base already.
No, we're about to get farther off base. Uh-oh. This technically should probably be Franken content, but we're already here, and you bringing up Trump made me think of it. Hang on, I'm sending you a picture on Discord. I'm not going to tell you anything other than Watts Bar is a nuclear power plant in the area that where I live. Okay. I want you to go through the journey organically that I went through when I saw this store.
Do I need to get something to gouge my eyes out?
I don't think so, but just like. Here you go. And sent.
That's not even the dumbest thing I've seen.
No, but like, okay, so for the audience to describe a visual gag in an audio medium, I sent Rage a picture from that I saw while I was at the store today picking up a prescription of a man wearing a hoodie that it says Nuke Life, and it's got like a biker or a Punisher-esque skull with an American flag bandana for... like over its face, like a face mask. It's COVID-19 2020 Watts Bar Nuclear practice social distancing at the bottom in like tiny letters. Like huge skull, American flag. Mm-hmm. And even though I think technically it's like, this is our face mask, just like you see so much shit of that like this around here that is like, Jesus is my face mask and COVID's not real. It's not gonna get me. Brr. That it's like, when I see that, my first thought is like, oh God, here we go again. So it's like, there's this journey that I went through of like, oh man, this guy in front of me. Oh, wait. Huh?
I mean, it's a slight blip, but at the same time, I think I'm so inoculated with all the bullshit around here that, yeah, the slight surprise of, oh, well, it's not complete shit, just has me, eh. I'm sorry to be a letdown on this one.
I went on more of a journey. I had an emotional journey waiting in line to get my prescription. Oh.
I mean, I've almost been run down by somebody that had at least 6 Punisher skulls on their truck. Because he has to drive on the sidewalk to avoid the speed bumps in the mall. The little shopping center.
Of course. Of course. With his little pavement princess. Mm-hmm. It's like a jacked up truck.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so... Okay, so when I close Chicken Store, there's usually at least, I would say, a half dozen to a dozen just random pavement princesses in the old Kmart parking lot where the store is. Just, you know, doing donuts and, you know, doing stuff for their social media. And it's all so over-the-top ridiculous vehicles.
Yeah.
There was one that had, and I'm not joking, light-up rims. And they were RGB.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those. And for anyone who doesn't know, a pavement princess is a vehicle of some kind that
usually a truck,
but it can be other vehicles that have undergone extensive modification for fake off-road. Like, at a quick glance, if you didn't know what you were looking like or looking at, you'd be like, "Oh man, that truck looks like it can like go off-road and do like some mudding or something." But in a real-world scenario, I mean, one, they're perfectly clean. But in a real-world scenario, like, that is exactly what you do not want if you're going and doing serious off-roading.
Yeah, not a scratch on them, you know?
Yep. These, like, jacked-up, lifted trucks, ridiculously overlifted without proper supports or strutting or any kind of reinforcement. They have huge rims and technically off-road tires on them, but they're, like, really thin tires, and you want big, grippy tires if you're going to go off-road. I guess it depends on the specific type of off-roading, but...
Especially, you know, after they've done some donuts and, you know, really worn down those treads, right?
Of course. Of course. And then, yeah, like, stuff that, like... I mean, there's nothing wrong with people having, like, some lights or even some, like, undercarriage lighting if you're going to go off-roading. Like, there are practical uses for that, but, like, not in the way that they're doing it. So, and, you know, like... In terms of, like, it's their money. If they want to waste it on something stupid, like, by all means. We all have dumb things that we spend money on. But this is, like, we know what you're doing. Anyone who knows, like, we know what you're doing.
But don't forget, yeah, they're not the snowflakes.
Right, of course.
Especially the ones that have, yeah, like, Punisher skulls or the, you know, Rebel flags or the Let's Go Brandon shit on their trucks, because there's so many of those around here.
Oh, jeez, that reminds me. I could not get a picture of this because I was driving down the interstate at, you know, interstate speed, 75 miles an hour or whatever. But I went past a semi-truck that was, the trailer was just covered in messages, you know. Like, God, if I was going slower or if I'd had a chance, I wish I could have taken a picture, because it was, like, covered in, you know, Let's Go Brandon and, you know, Trump did nothing wrong, and, you know, like, and it's like messages, like, spray painted onto the side of this truck.
Oh, InfoWar Riot.
Yes. But I could not. It was, you know, highway speeds, traffic was starting to bunch up. Shortly afterwards, there was an accident ahead, but, like, you know, that I drove into, but I was not close enough to be able to take a photo. It sucked, but I missed it. I just was like, oh boy, here we go. So anyways,
I wonder if this is it, or if it's a similar one. Because I went to InfoWar Rides, and I have a feeling this is just a similar one. But enjoy.
Does the person say where this picture was taken?
Does it say just Walmart parking lot in my town?
Damn. I mean, yeah, it's that kind of thing. Messages on down on the side. Need help. Let's stop communism. Let's go, Brandon. Like, listen. Oh, I wish there was some metadata or something that I could see to see where this was taken. Because, like, my mind is telling me, like, yes, that truck. But also, like, it's, you know, there's enough of those that are similar enough that I don't want to definitely say that. But, like, if this, you know, if this was taken, like, in Tennessee or around here, you know, in, like, a close neighboring state, I'd be willing to say that that was the truck. But, oh, and it was submitted 8 hours ago. Boy. All right. Yeah, I'm going to relieve that memory.
And what's also fun is he's an immigrant, according to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at this guy's posts to see if there's any, like, info on where he is.
Melted nachos.
Yeah, I don't see anything on what on his responses about where, so...
I'm just gonna ask. I saw a truck extremely similar to that the other day. Where did you take this photo? Spelled Nashville wrong. N-A-S-H-V-I. There we go. There we go. Boop. There we go. We did it. Our podcast, bringing people together. Me and some random guy on Reddit. Maybe we saw the same truck.
Oh. We'll
update you later on in the podcast if he responds. Anyways, that's kind of, it's kind of like we're playing a game. Hey, Rach, what about some other games that we played or game-related things?
Yeah, because mine's game-related, but
that's the most tortured segue. But by all means, go for it.
I'm sure you could torture it some more if you want to. Yeah, probably. Maybe rip its wings off.
Put it in a microwave, see if it mutates.
Make it watch Fox News for a while.
I'm going to immediately derail this before it even starts, because when I was a kid, once as a science experiment, I did put a mosquito in the microwave, pulled its wings off, and put it in the microwave to see if it would mutate, because I'd heard, like, oh yeah, microwaves, radiation, and, you know, every comic and video game and movie and whatever, it's like, radiation gives you superpowers. And I was surprised and upset when the microwave, like, melted and exploded the mosquito. So... anyways, the more you know.
FBI, now, okay. This one right here.
Yeah, now you may carry on.
So, back in December, as a combination birthday / Christmas, I got a hold of a Steam Deck. And I've been toying around with it for the last few months. Yeah, as I do, right?
As one does.
And this is like my, I would say, progress report on that, because I never really went... gave a first thoughts on it. So the Steam Deck, it's a... calling it a console is a bit of a misnomer. But it's not... There's a burgeoning market, partially because of the popularity of the Steam Deck that's been going on. That's the handheld PC market. And I would say the Steam Deck is probably the most... affordable for price to power ratio that you could get. Partially because, you know, it's essentially almost a loss leader for Valve to, you know, get people into, you know, onto their storefront, right? And yeah. I've looked at a handful of the different handheld PCs before, you know, was given this one. I was honestly originally saving up to get a Steam Deck, but Anita beat me to the punch there. And she got me a 64 gig LCD model, which I've since then upgraded to a terabyte hard drive, which is actually not that hard. It uses, you know, just a standard, not SSD, but M.2 drive, a particular size of it. So just, you know, get the proper one, slot it in and reformat. Simple, right?
Yep.
Or simple, simple for us, right?
Yeah, simple for enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, upgraded to a terabyte pretty much immediately, and have been tinkering with it. And I've had mixed results. I will say that I think that reviews kind of miss the point of the Steam Deck, where it's not meant to play, you know, the big AAA, you know, high-end games. It's meant for more, in my opinion, like the AA or older games, or streaming from another computer. In my opinion. Because if you're playing something like... let's pick a game that we're both playing and definitely not going to be on the Game Club rotation. Baldur's Gate. playing Baldur's Gate 3 is... it technically could do it, but once you start getting into more crowded areas, it chugs, and you have to essentially downscale and do running at a lower resolution, upscale it, which makes the game look kind of ass. And Baldur's Gate is a demanding game, especially in, you know, crowded areas.
Yes.
It just eats the battery for lunch. But whenever you start doing other things with it, the battery is more than, you know, capable of running the system for long periods of time. And that's why I think I kind of held off on it for a while, is that, you know, you hear, well, it gets 2 to 3 hours of battery life. Yeah, if you're turning full tilt, but if you're, you know, like playing Dead Cells, I get 9 hours of battery life on that. Running emulators, running a PS2 emulator is like 6 hours of battery life, depending on the game, of course. It's more of like a tinkering machine, you know?
Yeah.
Of going through, finding the settings that work for a particular game. I'm probably, yeah, like jumping all around at this point because, right? So my main games I've been playing on it has been, you know, like my indies, you know, playing like Vampire Survivors occasionally, touring around with Binding of Isaac. I am working on playing or getting The Hunter Call of the Wild loaded up, which is an actually unsupported game. It works perfectly fine. I will say that it requires a little bit of toying around with controls, because it's obviously not meant to be really played with a controller, at least on PC, without the proper prompts. But the fact that it's doable, you know?
Yeah.
I've done some cloud gaming through Xbox Game Pass, which has had mixed results. Anything fast-paced, obviously, it's just dried out. You know, so not firing up Forza Horizon. But I have found a workaround to be able to stream from my main computer to the Steam Deck on a local network, which has opened up faster-paced games like Forza. Because the main problem is that it's used, for in-home streaming, it wants to use anything that's in Steam. But using a open source version of a Moonlight with a the PC client that actually works on AMD, and that's kind of the, like I said, it's kind of opened up the whole, this whole other world of tinkering for me that I've really been enjoying, you know?
Yeah. Nice.
It's definitely not plug and play. And that's why I hesitate to call it a console. Because in my mind, console gaming, you know, it's a set experience. You sit down, you play your game, that's it. This, it requires you to work for it for at least some games. Especially if you're playing more intense games, you know? There are resources out there that will lead you in the right direction. Like, there's a plugin called Decky Loader. That's like a secondary like mod scene for the sidebar. It has a secondary menu that can pop up over the game, and Decky Loader can insert plugins into that. And one of them is essentially a almanac of game settings. How long the battery lasts. What settings to tweak to be able to get the best experience. And it's made it a lot easier to pick up and play a lot faster. It's not required to use it, but it definitely does help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I am running the LCD version, so I don't get the sweet, sweet OLED display, but honestly, it's fine for me. It doesn't have to be the cutting edge. And there's been some reports that the OLED models of the Steam Deck are a little bit more prone to burn-in. Wolfden actually did a test on the Steam Deck's OLED display and started seeing burn-in after 1,000 hours. Which sounds like a lot, but whenever you're gaming with something with static images or a static UI, that could rack up fairly quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Especially since you just suspend the game, put it back on charge, and then, you know, pick up right where you left off, right?
Yeah. I almost bought a Steam Deck. Like, I had one reserved, but then I wound up canceling it because I thought about it, and, like, the type of gaming that I do and when and why is better served by my laptop in probably 95%+ of cases if I'm not at home. And even when I am at home, like, I tend to do all of my gaming exclusively in my office at my desk chair. And the place where I would be most likely to use that is, like, if I'm sitting in the living room doing something with either Katie or my kid, it's just like, well, we're just going to be in the same place together. And we don't do a lot of that. Like, if we're in the same place, usually we're doing the same thing. Board games, TV, video games together. We're playing video games together. Usually I'm, you know, we're each at our respective desks with our respective computers.
See, that's where the use case for me has actually been really helpful, is that if I'm wanting to spend time with Anita, she is usually either on her tablet playing a puzzle game of some sort, or playing the Pokebeans, and we're, you know, just kind of hanging out together, listening to a show, or on YouTube, or, you know, watching something on streaming. And I can't really be tethered to my desk on that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of reopened up my PC library to be able to, you know, play it more often. Sort of like how I could do with the Switch as well. Yeah, this game while hanging out with her instead of having to be tethered to a monitor. So it's kind of it's filling a certain niche that that has been really helpful for my gaming time. And plus the fact that you could set it up where you could have different... So there's an internal storage, which, like I said, I upgraded pretty much immediately. And also, what's kind of neat is I took the old M.2 drive. No, it's not, probably not the proper name for it. And made it into a thumbstick. So I ended up with a really, really fast thumb drive as well.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you're saying M.2, and... NVMe, I think...
NVMe, that's what I was blanking on.
I think there's a difference, but, like... Yeah.
It's the same type of drive, essentially. A chip on a removable circuit board, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just blanking on that, so I went M.2, which is what I think my computer could support. Or my motherboard, I should say.
So, yeah. Anyways.
Basically, NVMe is similar, but not quite. So, yeah. Sorry, I was double-checking myself now. And like I said, I just defaulted to M.2 because, you know, that's what I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
But you knew what I was talking about, at least.
I did know what you were talking about. It took me a minute for my brain to pull NVMe, but...
So, I upgraded that, but it also has an expansion slot for microSD cards. So, I've started collecting a little bit of a collection on... collecting a collection, I don't know. Of microSD cards. One, I have a backup of the SteamOS that I originally reformatted the drive with anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that's just generic games. One that's, you know, my totally legal and personally ripped retro console ROMs. And what I'm planning on doing is actually dual booting Windows from a microSD card to be able to have some functionality of a portable Windows device, but not completely nuke the internal storage.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the most elegant solution of it. The fact that you just, you know, set the boot order to look at the microSD card first and maybe add like a fraction of a second of boot time to it, right?
Yeah. Which, in the grand scheme of things, is not that big a deal, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but I've been rather impressed with it. Like I said, it definitely requires a little bit of tinkering, a little bit of the proper mindset on it. And I think if you're not really a tech enthusiast or willing to learn and tinker with stuff, it's going to be a bit more of a sour experience. But if you go into it with the right mindset and not, I think that, oh boy, I can't wait to play Helldivers on this, right? Or whatever flavor of the month, big game that, requires like a supercomputer to run.
Well, I mean, it's all in the name of, of spreading democracy across the universe, right? So, Helldivers. Is that the meme? I think that's the meme.
I only vaguely know of Helldivers right now, so I don't even know exactly what the game is like. I just kind of picked that one almost at random.
Third-person action shooter. I don't know a ton about it. It's probably not something I'm going to play. Just because it's so multiplayer-focused. Maybe multiplayer-exclusively focused. Like, I'm just not interested in that, you know? But a lot of people seem to really like it, so.
You're going to have a little bit of a rough time, like, playing POW World or something, you know?
Yeah.
I think POW World is pretty intensive. Now I'm wondering if I'm picking the right one, but you know what I mean? Playing a very intensive, CPU intensive.
Yeah.
You're going to have a little bit of a rougher time, but if you back it down a little bit, it's definitely has its moments, you know?
Yeah.
Plus there's also, like in-house streaming. There's the Steam version and then there's the one I've been using, which is, Sunshine and Moonlight. Moonlight is the client, and Sunshine is the open source host. Which that's the one that I kind of showed you like a couple months ago now.
Yeah,
and the fact that there's a more gaming focused in-house streaming option now. That's not exclusive to NVIDIA's. Yeah, nice. And while the Steam streaming is useful, it has its limitations. So I feel like I'm just rambling now. So do you have anything that you want to ask me about it?
Not particularly. I mean, I think, maybe you went a little side to side, skipped around a little bit. But I feel like you explained it well. So I do not think I have any questions.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to start up Stardew Valley again. 1.6 just launched.
Sweet. Okay.
Sorry, I just saw that update as I was fucking around. Like, what else do I play on this, right?
Yeah. Okie dokie.
Anyway, your game.
My game, yeah. X4 Foundation. So I mentioned this a few weeks ago before February's Game Club. I said that I was going to be playing this again. And I had, just started a new playthrough and had given a brief synopsis of what the X series was. To give another super deep or super quick synopsis on what the X series is. The X series is a game of space simulator video games. They're not quite 4X, but there is a lot of exploring, expanding, exploiting, and exterminating, but it doesn't play like a traditional 4X in that sense. It's you are in direct control of a ship. In the most recent couple of games, you have a person that you walk around as. You have a character avatar, for lack of a better term, as opposed to just being stuck in a spaceship or in your spacesuit outside of the spaceship. You can walk around on space stations, inside ships, they have interiors. But anyways, there is a very deep, extremely well-developed universe over the course of the last 20 years that has existed in this series of games. I believe there's 6 games in total with 4 mainline games and then a couple of spinoffs and then a whole bunch of expansions. And you can play any way you want. There are some stories that you can participate in, things that you can do, missions, etc. But you can also just start up a game, and if you want to go be a pirate, you can go capture ships and sell them, or you can smuggle goods. If you want to fight for one of the major factions, you can go sort of start working with their military and get some bigger ships and go to war. Or if you want to do what I do, which is take over the entire universe via the machinations of capitalism and the military-industrial complex, and then just sort of puppet master the galaxy with your arms sales, that's what I do. The game has an extremely deep and detailed simulation model that they have spent, you know, 2 decades refining to dynamically have these factions engage with one another, and the universe never stands still. With X4, whenever it starts, there are some things like it does a random seed to generate a lot of things like space station locations, aside from like sort of the faction headquarters and a few other things that are set. But you get a randomly generated universe, so every time you start up the game, even if all you do is just sit in a corner and watch what happens unfold, different things will happen each time. So, 2 thumbs up. Love all of that. Super brief. I've talked about it in more detail in an episode, gosh, from a couple of years ago when I played this before the DLCs were out. But the game has got 4 DLCs out currently, and when I started this playthrough shortly after, they announced the next DLC. And I wanted to talk about a little bit about those. And how they changed the experience, because there's several mechanics that are new to this game specifically. The first of which is terraforming. And the second one is recycling, salvaging and recycling. Terraforming is something that exists in the lore of the universe. In the history of the series, the humans on Earth, although they are the Terran faction in-game, but the humans on Earth developed terraforming technology in the form of self-replicating machines who had gold drift from their original intent, and they started terraforming everything. And they didn't care if it had living, humans or sapient alien species on it or not. And then they evolved to develop weapons of war, and that caused some major problems in the setting. So terraforming, at one point, I believe, is outlawed in the lore, but no longer is. And terraforming is something that's open to all players, regardless of whether or not you have the DLC. The way that Egosoft, the people who make this game, have done their DLC mechanics, I really like. They do major game updates with every DLC release, and the core mechanic of the DLC, all players get access to. But if you buy the DLC, you get some more stuff, either some specific tools for it, or it expands it in some other kind of way. So terraforming exists for all players, even if you just have the base game. And there are a set of terraforming missions, quote-unquote, that you can do. But if you have the DLC, that gives you the Terran DLC, that gives you access to the Terran terraforming tech, which you can go through some missions to unlock. And then it adds additional DLC, additional terraforming planets based on which other DLCs you have purchased and installed, which I think is a pretty nice touch. And terraforming is like an extreme late game resource and time sink for players to invest themselves in. Economically speaking, I have absolutely everything. I have more money than I need. I can buy anything that I want. Although,
yeah, but do you have all the money?
I do not have all the money, but I can buy anything that I want. I can manufacture everything in the game. I can mix and match. Like, there are some expanded storylines that I have not completed yet. But essentially, like, I won X4, and either I could restart to try and do something different, or I could do what I'm doing, which is kind of finishing out the rest of the story content. But to give you something to do and some large long-term goals to work towards, there's terraforming. And the easiest terraforming mission has so far cost me something like 5 billion credits worth of resources and counting. I read some online guides that made some estimates on what it was going to cost for certain terraforming projects, And I think I mentioned this to you a few weeks ago. It was supposed to be like a billion credits to do one of the terraforming projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that meant do the entire terraforming project for the planet. But no, it's a single project in the line of terraforming projects that you can do. The only one that I've worked on so far is there's this planet that do, like, the way that it lists it is like a long time ago, this planet was inhabited by, you know, a species, and they seem to have nuked themselves into oblivion. And there are some plants that seem to thrive in an irradiated wasteland, and they have just made the planet, which otherwise would be hospitable to this specific race that the planet is in their territory. It would be hospitable, but because these plants thrive in a radioactive environment, they are keeping the planet radioactive. So the goal is to remove, either genetically modify or just completely remove the plants that... and all of the flora and fauna that makes the planet radioactive, fix all of the ecological damage done to the planet, and then build infrastructure for a billion people to thrive on this world. And I have gotten to the... I built a power, like an antimatter power station on the planet. I cleared out all of the radioactive flora and fauna, and there are multiple projects to clear up the radiation on the planet, and like one of them targets the oceans, and one targets the land masses, and one targets something to do with like the planet's ionosphere, and like you alter the planet so that its ionosphere is correct. Like, it explains it all. It does a really good job explaining actually what terraforming is. There's a lot of information to be found in the game. But, like, all of this has taken me dozens of hours and billions of invested resources. And that's just the first planet. And there are different planets that are more complex and complicated, and they have other things to them. The terraforming stuff seems to function along the same lines. You know, it's a project. You dump an ass load of resources into it. You fix the planet. And you get something out of it as a gameplay change. For this one, the faction that wants the planet is sort of a minor faction. And it seems like that giving them the planet and the associated system will bump them up to sort of a mid-sized faction. Which means that they will get their own shipyards and their own wharfs. And they'll trade resources more frequently. They'll probably actively participate a little more in the ongoing politics of the world, and might see them in wars or trying to defend other sectors from Xenon or the Cock, which I think is hilarious. Those are like an insectoid race of aliens that just hate everyone.
Of course, because everybody around them is laughing at them.
Makes fun of their name, yeah. The Cock are actually really scary, though. When they show up in a system, like if you see one or two of them...
So they're giant dicks?
They're giant dicks. If you see one or two of them show up, you have to stop what you're doing and go find where their base is and blow it up. Otherwise, they will harass and nuke you into oblivion as they multiply over time. Because it's like they're insects, so they multiply. Gotta kill those boys fast. But so that's the terraforming mechanic. And it's really deep. It's really enjoyable. It has pushed me to think about supply chains in this game in a way that I have not before. My typical solution to solving problems in a game like this is brute force. It's like you need, you know, 500 of resource X every, you know, let's say 10 minutes. It's like, okay, well, I could spend some time optimizing my... my supply chain or the route which the resources take. I could make sure to match inputs to outputs so there's no waste. Or I can just overbuild something. Like, just go crazy with whatever resource I need. And I, you know, there's some overage, there's some waste, but I get what I need done. And this really rewards you because of how much it is, because of how efficient it wants you to be to complete the task quickly. It makes me think about this supply chain problem in a more intelligent way. I mean, I suppose I could brute force the problem. I could, because you have to transport you have to teleport your headquarters base to wherever you're going. And either I could turn that base into a crazy space factory, or I could build a crazy space factory in whatever sector I'm going to just way overproduce everything to get the few resources that I actually need to complete the terraforming project. Or I can build supply chains and monitor my ships a little more closely so that I'm delivering resources as efficiently as possible. And I'm sure, like, the more I talk, the more boring this sounds to a certain subset of people, or the more, like, excited you're getting in your groin thinking about having to optimize supply chains for your intergalactic spaceship transport network.
It just makes me wish Satisfactory 1.0 launched, so I could jump back into that.
Yeah. The other major DLCs, the mechanics that they add... To get off of terraforming, that's the gist of terraforming, and I've spent the most time on the DLC engaging with that system other than the story missions. The other things that I have found so far are the tiered ship system. It added sort of a second tier of ships, and as part of the DLC, like, it adds a couple of factions that have, like, really, really strong, super-focused ships. As opposed to having, you know, sort of more jack-of-all-trade ships or more balanced ships. They're like, this ship is supposed to have guns? All right, we're going to give it 20 guns, but it's going to have, like, no shields and no armor protection. Good luck. And so they added a two-tiered ship system for a lot of the other factions, which, I don't know, that may sound good, that may sound bad, but the tier two ships are always an upgrade, and the cost is, it's like, well, they're way more expensive. So if you take a fighter and it's got maybe 5,000 armor points, the tier 2 version of the ship will have 10,000 armor points. And it won't be any slower, it won't have any less weapons, it won't have any less anything. It's like, but it's like, well, to get this much armor, we had to use all of these advanced materials. So it's, you get twice as much armor, but it's three times more expensive. And so... It introduces some interesting mechanics that way, but I can basically ignore that because I have all the money, so I can just pick the tier 2 ship of everything. It feels like that's more useful or more relevant early to mid-game when you've got no or very few resources, but where I'm at in the game, it doesn't matter. I'm like, I'll just pick the ships that I like. I don't care. I don't care what they cost. When the DLCs adds... recycling and salvaging, and it adds those mechanics to the game with the basics that you need to engage with those systems if you don't have the DLC. If you do have the DLC, you get mobile salvage carriers, which can break down wrecks, salvage space stations, salvage spaceships, and certain types of space debris sort of on site, and then your salvage tugs can take it back to your main base for final reprocessing. And that's a neat thing. It allows you to skip certain steps in the supply chain because it's like, well, you're already taking recycle, or you're already taking ship components or space station components or whatever. So you, instead of having to put in raw ore and, build up to, you put in your ore, you put in your silicon ore, and eventually you get advanced computer components and engine parts and weapons. You get to skip that step, you know, those first steps, and just straight up get weapon components and missiles and advanced electronics and things like that out of the salvage system. It's pretty neat. It is an interesting and fun way to make money or gather resources, because there are certain sort of choke points that develop if you keep the main factions kind of sort of balanced. There are choke points that develop where that they just get bogged down, and you can sell materials and ships to both sides of the conflict and then come in and salvage the stuff that they blow up and turn that into profit by either selling it back to the factions as more materials or turning it into more ships, which the factions buy. Good stuff.
Yeah, this ship fell off the ship.
Yeah. And that's part of the Tides of Avarice DLC, which is, I think, probably the best DLC that I've really engaged with the story. It ties some of the other games together. There's some recurring characters and some recurring things that it does some interesting stuff with. I mean, the X series are not primarily, like, story-based games. The voice acting is a little janky, you know, because they're a small studio. The same actor,
freelancer.
No, but the same voice actor plays, you know, a dozen or more characters sometimes. So it's like you have a voice actor talking to himself, you know, in basically the same voice sometimes. But it's nice to see.
It's like Oblivion.
Yeah, kind of. And honestly, the dialogue sometimes is just as janky as Oblivion too. But it ties in some previous story content and some things like that. And the star systems it adds are beautiful. They're next to the sun, and it's called Tides of Avaris because the system is called Avaris. And there's this thing called the Tide. And every so often, the sun has like a mass coronal ejection, and ships that get caught in it take a lot of damage. And if they're not strong enough, they get destroyed. Space stations get damaged. It's really interesting. It adds some risk reward mechanics because this sector is like super duper resource rich, but you run the risk of having bunches of stuff blown up if you don't adequately prepare, because when there's a tide, all your stuff will get destroyed. So that's neat. And then the other DLC, which I have not engaged with at all, is Kingdom's End, which re-adds the only missing mainline race from the prior games called the Boron, but I haven't engaged with it at all yet. And because of the nature of that DLC and the way that it interacts with the main world, it doesn't trigger at all until you start the quest line associated for it. So I've just kind of been saving it for the end. I love X4. I love everything about this series. The biggest issue I have with it is that despite all of the years of performance optimizations and everything, because of what it is and because it has that persistent background simulation that's running at all times for thousands, tens of thousands of entities, it can get bogged down. The frame rate can die, and things can grind to a halt at times while it's trying to figure out what's going on. There's little tricks that you can use to help it. And to a certain extent, you can reduce your graphic settings and help. But obviously, because it's CPU bound instead of GPU bound, there's only so much you can do with that. So whenever you need to really like spend some time in the minimap, it's like just go point your ship into deep, dark, black space or stare at a wall. That way it's not having to do physics and generate, the stuff out in front of you. But there's nothing I can do about that except get a better computer. And that's on my list of things, but, you know, I'll get it when I get it. I still manage to average about 30 frames a second. Not ideal, you know, I'm definitely like a 60 frames minimum guy. But given the type of game that this is and how little, like, space combat I actually personally do, it doesn't bother me all that much. So yeah, X4, love it. I'm going to keep playing it. I got a whole bunch of planets to terraform. Woo.
Yeah, and that's a big bill.
That's a huge bill. Billions. I had 1.5 billion sitting in my account when I was playing earlier today. I played for about an hour after I got home. I was like, okay, I need to build a whole bunch of construction vessels for this terraforming project. That's going to set me back a few hundred million. But it's okay. If only I had, you know, a simple few hundred million in real life.
If only, right?
If only. All right, let's move on to our news topics. We got a bunch of them, and we're going to go until either we finish or one of us gets so tired we can't continue. Our first topic, not Community Corner, from Asteroids to Guitar Hero World Video Game Hall of Fame finalists drawn from 4 decades.
Yeah, I thought this would be fun since this popped up again somewhat recently.
Yeah.
The Video Game Hall of Fame. This is the... Hang on, let's see what... If it actually says on here. I don't see what round this is. But they've been doing this for several years. They'll have a spattering of video games to induct into the Video Game Hall of Fame. And this year they got a wide variety, so... they have Asteroids, as in, you know, one of the very first commercial successful video games. Elite, which, you know, I wonder if you know that one, right?
Yes, I wonder.
Guitar Hero, the kind of kicked off the whole music genre. It wasn't the first, but it definitely popularized it. Metroid, the original on the NES, they claim, at least in this article, one of the first playable female human character. Although I'm not sure about that, but you know, it definitely had a big surprise at the end if you beat the game fast enough.
Yeah, Samus is definitely an early contender. I don't know if that's actually true or not. There's probably a documentary somewhere that talks about the first, you know, the very first female video game protagonist. But Samus is definitely an early one, at the very least.
But also, was one of the first ones that wasn't shown to be, you know, physically weaker. You know, she was a badass right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Myst, one of the first to really take use of the CD format on PC, or I should say, make great advantageous use of it. A lot of pre-rendered stuff, and it made the game look absolutely beautiful for the time. A little bit dated nowadays, just because, you know, pre-rendered videos can't really scale. But, you know, definitely groundbreaking.
Yeah.
The website Neopets. Which, that takes me back. That Neopets was so big in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
That was, like, the prime time of, like, you know, Flash-based and Java-based games. I'm not sure if Neopets would be my pick for that entry, but eh. Resident Evil. I mean, also another big one, right?
Yep.
Sim City, which, you know, popularized the, or was one of the first city builders, if not the first. Now, this one, I don't know. Tendokami Memorial. It elevated the dating simulator genre, offering a cohesive narrative, colorful graphics, and engaging gameplay. I mean, it's Konami, right?
Yeah, I don't know this game either.
Back when Konami actually made video games, right?
Yeah.
Actually, when did this? It released in 94. All right. Tony Hawk Pro Skater really captured the extreme sports of the late 90s, early 2000s. According to this, $1.4 billion in sales. Kind of a shame what happened to that series, though, huh?
Yeah. I could see it, though.
Yeah.
The numbers, that is. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Already. John caught me there. But yeah, I could see the $1.4 billion. There were a lot of Tony Hawk games.
Yeah, I mean, there were, what, four or five just on the PlayStation? The first PlayStation?
Yeah. And I remember there being at least a couple on Game Boy, and they were on Dreamcast,
see.
I think?
First or one the... was the Pro Skater in 1999. I'm on the Wikipedia page now.
Okay.
Then 2000 had Pro Skater 2, 2001 had Pro Skater 3, and Pro Skater 2X, which was on Xbox. 2002 had Pro Skater 4, Game Boy Advance, Mobile, PlayStation, Windows, Underground 2 in 2003 and 4, American Wasteland 2005, Downhill Jam in 2006, Project 8 in 2006 as well, 2007 Proving Ground. I didn't realize just how much they milked Tony Hawk, right?
Yeah.
Tony Hawk's Motion, which was a DS game, and Vert, which was a mobile game, 2008 for Motion, 2009 Vert with Tony Hawk's Ride, also in 2009, 2010 Shred, 2012 Pro Skater HD, 2014 So 2013 is the first year from 1999 that they didn't have a Tony Hawk game. That's kind of wild, huh?
Yeah.
Shred Session, which was mobile only. It looks like only on iOS, with it being pulled from Android pretty much after a soft launch. Pro Skater 5 was on PlayStation 4, Xbox One. That one was the one that was pretty much just shat out because they realized they still had the license for X amount of time, if I recall correctly. It was, put out like the day before they lost the license. Skate Jam 2018. Then 2020 was when Pro Skater 1 Plus 2 released, which was the remaster. So, a lot of Tony Hawk games.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it was that big a series. Speaking of big series, Ultima. Damn, that's a big one back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And You Don't Know Jack, which is also another really big series of party games.
Yep. The Jackbox party packs are how I know that primarily. So many games.
Yeah, so they pick four. That's the 12 finalists.
Yeah. What would be the four that you would pick? Like, just personally, if you got to decide, which four would you pick?
Well, I'm just double checking to make sure it's four, but okay. Well, let's pick five just to make it fun, you know?
Sure.
It's hard to say no to Asteroids, just because it's one of the first, commercially viable games out there. If I recall correctly, it was one of the first, like, coin-operated games, if not the first. And it was so popular that the machines were breaking because there were too many quarters in it.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the folklore of it. I have a soft spot for the SimCity series. So, and I think it is also very important because it really propelled Maxis for quite a while. But until they got, eaten by, the gaming Galactus.
Yes. Fucking EA.
I would go with Metroid. I'm not a huge fan of the Metroid series. I've tried playing it a few times and it just never really clicked for me. Partly because, going back to retro games past a certain point, it's a little tough if you don't have the nostalgia form, or at least the instructions. Because, they expect you to, be able to sit there and read the instruction manual, right?
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that there's an entire genre of games that's derivative of, Metroid and Castlevania, but Metroid is the first half of that, right? And the fact that Metroid is such a huge, spanning series that's still seeing releases. I mean, it's a Nintendo property, so if it's profitable, it's going to see releases till the end of time. But the fact that an entire, essentially, genre of game was built from the bones of Metroid, really kind of sells it to me.
Yeah.
Let's see, that's three. I think I would go Resident Evil, just because of how it really, like this article says, popularized survival horror, even though it's not my thing. It's definitely not my thing. But I recognize just how influential Resident Evil has been, and how it really propelled the horror genre of video games.
Yeah.
Like I said, not my thing, but I recognize it. And I think I also would say the same for Guitar Hero.
Okay.
It wasn't the first music game, but it propelled things along, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even an original game. There were others that were very similar to it, but it was the one that was able to get the licensed music. It was the one that was able to, capture the minds of people. It had the guitar,
Yeah. That made all the difference. The guitar. That, and then DDR with its dance pad.
Yeah. And especially whenever they expanded it to Rock Band and had the entire band,
Yeah.
So I would say that would be my five.
Okay, so list them all rapid fire.
Asteroids, Guitar Hero, Metroid, Resident Evil, SimCity.
Okay. So mine, little overlap.
With a potential of the one I don't know from Konami, because I don't know that one, you know?
Yeah. Smidgen of overlap. I agree with you on Metroid and Resident Evil. For pretty much the same reasons, because of the genres that they spawned and how influential mm-hmm. that they were. I'm more into Metroid than I am Resident Evil, but still, I mean, Metroid is the first half of Metroidvania, a genre that generally speaking, I just don't vibe with. I just don't. It's just not my kind of game. After that, I'd say Myst, for being extremely influential, extremely groundbreaking and trendsetting. Elite, for a lot of the same reasons as Metroid or Resident Evil. Like, it's sort of the genesis point for a whole genre of games that has, you know, iterated on over the years and evolved. And then I really struggle with five, with a fifth, because I've got two or three that I would put in that fifth slot that all feel kind of tied for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick one, I'd probably say Asteroids. So a smidgen more overlap, but for me, it's just like, it's Asteroids. It's, I can't believe Asteroids isn't in the Video Game Hall of Fame already, honestly. So, you know, Metroid, Elite, Resident Evil, Myst, Asteroids. Those are my five picks. And pretty much all of them, the basic reasons. Like, they were extremely influential, huge, groundbreaking games at the time. That all, while they did it in their own way, they all broke new ground. You know, they walked so future games, both in their series mm-hmm. and genres, could run. So, those are my picks. If I get to decide, and yeah, since you can go,
yeah, down, yeah, I'm going back to see what last year's was. They never updated the Wikipedia article, so they don't have who actually. Never mind. So, The Last of Us, Wii Sports, Computer Space, and Barbie Fashion Designer from last year, which I remember us talking about Barbie Fashion Designer.
Yeah. Where can you vote? It says you can vote until the 21st of March. I mean, by the time this comes out, if you didn't know about it, like, too bad, because this episode will release on the 22nd. But I want to go vote. Have a
time machine.
Right?
Looks like Dance Dance Revolution made it in 2022, along with Sid Meier's Civilization, Miss Pac-Man, and Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Yeah, they induct four every year. Ooh, 2021. StarCraft, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Animal Crossing, and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Looks like Guitar Hero was in the running for 2021 and didn't make it. So it does look like it can pop up multiple times. Yeah, if they don't make it this time, they could still try again. Like, Rogue was in the 2022 class, but didn't make the cut. Which, that's another one that, yeah, looking at it, that should be there. Because you have an entire fucking genre called roguelikes.
Yeah.
But that's also another one that, yeah, it's from 1980. I imagine people look at Rogue and like, why the hell would anybody want to play this? Not realizing it's 1980.
Honestly, I look at shitloads of games today and I'm like, why would anybody want to play this?
True. It's like Myst was in the 2019 class. It lost out to Colossal Cave Adventure, which, why does that look familiar? It's a 1976 game. Right? That text-based, one of the first, or one of the major text-based games in the late 70s. Microsoft Solitaire, which, right, Mortal Kombat and Super Mario Kart.
Neat. Their website sucks. I found it. It sucks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the strong National Museum of Play is the World Video Game Hall of Fame, and it's just here. If you want to go look at their actual website, you can.
I'm on it now.
Okay, yeah. You can nominate a game if you want, but I don't see where you can actually vote.
I found it.
Oh, where do you actually vote?
Player's Choice Ballot. On the main page. Or actually, it's not on the main page. It's where it dropped me off. Hang on.
Oh, I found it.
I was trying to find how I got there. One vote per day.
Thank you for voting. Return to poll. Cool. I voted.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Elite.
SimCity.
Gotta represent. Spent like 35 or 40 minutes talking about a game that is inspired by Elite. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at them on Google Maps. I wanted to see photos, which there we are. Oh, dude. I would have so much fun here.
Mm-hmm.
They have a rather goofy looking Hulk. I'm not sure if it's just like the angle or what, but let's see if I can. Can I just link this directly? Or... Okay, I could just. It's going to be a long ass URL, but you need. It looks like he's about to sneeze, you know? It's not the Hulk screaming in rage, it's just him sneezing. At least to me, you know?
Okay.
Long ass URL, but hopefully that comes through.
Yep. I can see it. I can see it. It does. I can see it being like he's about to be like, ah. I'm just waiting for the chew.
Does look like it'd be a hell of a time, though.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, moving on to listener suggestions, because, right?
Indeed. Let's move along. So yeah, for the community corner, people put stuff in our Discord. First up in the community corner, and we got a bunch of stuff, so we're just gonna.
Were off a couple weeks, so.
Yeah. So our first thing in the community corner for this week, Apex Legends streamer surprised to find aimbot and other hacks added to their PCs in the middle of major competition.
Yeah, that's a new one, huh? So yeah. There's a really interesting just Twitch clip on the PC Gamer article that we're hopefully going to link, where guys just playing in the competition, and suddenly he has a wall hack and can see where everybody is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's properly freaked, as he should be. And it's just... It's mind-boggling that a arbitrary code execution can be exploited this badly. It makes me wonder what the hell is going on under the hood in the anti-cheat, because that's where people are thinking this came from.
Yep.
And Apex Legends anti-cheat is buried deep in the system.
Yeah.
According to some comments I read on Reddit, because, yeah, if you don't know what the hell's going on, poke around on Reddit for a bit. Anti-cheat for Apex Legends is on the kernel level of the system. So basically, it's about as far down as you can go.
Yeah.
And exploiting that backdoor gives you pretty much carte blanche access to the system.
Yeah. They issued a PSA that says, currently there's an RCE exploit being abused in Apex Legends, and it can be delivered via the game itself or its anti-cheat protection, advising against playing any games protected by EAC or any EA titles, they went on to say. And then
this is a volunteer group called the Anti-Cheat Police. Basically, a group that tries to bust cheaters and hacking programs.
Yeah. And the Anti-Cheat Police are recommending that you perform a clean OS reinstall as soon as possible. Do not take any chances with your personal information, as your PC may have been exposed to a rootkit or other malicious software that could cause further damage.
You know, just a complete factored reset. You know, nothing major, right? Honestly, if this happened to me, this would just completely put me off Apex Legends and EA stuff in general.
And also that Ron Swanson clip where he takes his computer out and throws it in the dumpster. That's what I'm thinking of. But yeah. Like, this is awful. And yeah, I don't fully...
It's mind-boggling.
And this goes beyond, like, the level of, like, tech stuff. That, like, I do understand, like, the severity of it, kernel access, and, like, I do understand, like, that's bad. You know, that's just leaving your front and your back door wide open with a huge siren. It's like, hey, come in here and mess with my stuff, you know? Like, I do get that, but, like, I don't understand how this could happen. I don't understand how that, like, it could have been exploited or what's wrong with their, software that's leaving it so open to exploitation like this. There are, I'm sure, much smarter people than me who are...
Well, Reddit did point out that Apex Legends have had a history of having hacks. This was the same Battle Royale game that hackers basically took offline and started spamming Save Titanfall on.
Yeah. If
you recall that one.
I do, yeah, from last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Apex Legends is a bit of a hot mess on the anti-cheat department, huh?
Yeah. That's one way to say it. Bit of a hot mess. But...
I mean, I feel sorry for the, you know, the people taking part in this tournament, because this was, like, some sort of national tournament.
Yeah, and it looks like they postponed the tournament, mm-hmm. which, I mean, they should. Like, that seems like the least that they can do.
Yeah, and this guy in the clip is not the only one. There was a second one that had an aim bot injected into their game.
Mm-hmm.
Which, whew, I'm just at a loss for words. I mean...
Yeah.
I don't
know what else to say. This, I mean, this is awful, and it sucks, and it's wild to me. An interesting way to hack? I mean, literally, yeah, an interesting mm-hmm. way to hack the tournament.
I mean, I definitely understand, you know, trying to revive Titanfall, but, yeah, this is not going to do it.
No, it's not, but what a special time we live in.
And I'm watching the Twitch clip of the guy that got the aimbot. Granted, I don't know enough about the game to really be able to tell, but yeah, I'm just watching the chat just light up with laughter about it.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. All right. That's a thing.
Yeah, that's one bad thing. You want to go talk about another bad thing?
Yeah, but this one's just as funny.
Skull and Bones looks like it's doing worse than Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. oh, jeez, Skull and Bones.
Remember, Quadruple A.
The first, like, massive sarcasm quotes, the first ever Quadruple A video game. Hot garbage. Hot garbage. With a poor launch. I mean, it's another... Listen, dear listener, right? We have discussed many times on this show how it is a bad idea, an extremely bad and unsustainable idea, to make every single game this massive online live service game. So it is no surprise that when a whole bunch of them come out, at best they cannibalize each other. And at worst, they just all fail because they oversaturate the market. And that is where we're at. Where we're at.
I mean, that's what's even more frustrating with Skull and Bones is Ubisoft had a plan for a successful pirate game. It's called Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Yep.
I've actually... started playing a little bit of it because all the talk about Skull and Bones made me want to play a pirate game.
Yeah, just do another one of those. That's all you gotta do. Make a single player game that people like. Maybe you can co-op. Yeah, or you know, you can throw in a little multiplayer component, give it a multiplayer mode. That's fine. Not everything. It's not even anything has to be. It's literally not everything can be a live service title. there is enough room for a small handful of those games to thrive in the market. And for now, they seem to be pretty well established.
And but here's the problem, okay? Is that the executives... Actually, I'll just stop there, can I?
Yep.
But, okay. The executives see the handful of very, very successful live service games. I would say, like, Destiny... depending on how you view your definition, something like Diablo, Diablo 4.
Mm-hmm.
Overwatch, They see...
Fortnite.
Definitely Fortnite. I blank on Fortnite because, honestly, I don't care about Fortnite.
Right.
But Roblox, They see the big numbers that are coming in from these live service games. And they're like, well, why aren't we doing that?
Yeah.
Because their suits, they don't care that there's only so much of the pie to go around. They want their slice anyway. And it doesn't matter that if they shit out a game and it lasts, under a year, especially on the mobile market, because they'll still make back whatever investment they made, most likely. Or if not, at least it looks really good for the investors,
Yeah.
I know it's so cynical to say, but it makes the portfolio look so much better whenever there's a live service game on the horizon or coming out. But that's kind of part of the problem.
In, I can't remember, because sometimes I mix up, like, what is in the Gymquisition podcast and what is, on James Stephanie Sterling's YouTube channel. But, the thing that has been said by her a couple of times at this point is, it seems like these studios are just throwing everything against the wall and seeing what sticks. And they're hoping that in sort of the aggregate that they come out on top. They're willing to burn, seemingly dozens of IPs, both old and potential new ones, to find one or two games. Because if you get a Fortnite, that's it. You're good. You're set. You've got the money machine. And I don't think it's going to work out for most devs anyways.
Square Enix has been doing that like crazy.
Yeah.
Especially in the mobile market. The mobile market's so bad right now, just in general. But there's just so many of these live service games that come out last 6 months or so, and then just die off. Or now I need to go hunting for it. There was one that announced its opening and closing in the same tweet.
I didn't see that. What announced its opening and closing in the same tweet?
It was it was Love Live! School Idol Festival 2. It had been in Japan for like 6 months or a year. And I guess contractually they had to open in the West. But they opened, they announced it opening and closing in literally the same week, in the same tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a PC Gamer article to show you that I'm not making this up.
No, I don't. I believe you. I don't think you're making it up.
But yeah, it's like full on like Onion article or headline, right? Popular Japanese rhythm game sets cancellation record by announcing release date and closure in the same tweet. So at this point, bring it on, right?
We are excited to break the news to you that the global version of Love Live School Idol Festival 2 Miracle Live is launching soon in February 2024. However, we also want to inform you that the global version will close its doors on May 31st, 2024, and cease in-app purchases accordingly. We appreciate the love and support you've shown, and we're committed to making these last few months an unforgettable moment. Wow. That is... On the one hand, that sounds incredibly, like, sweet and sad, but on the other hand, it's just hilarious. It's like, we tried our best, guys. We've got 1 month left on the web servers. Let's make it count.
Right?
Yeah.
I think I had that on the docket at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Just what the hell, right?
All right. Ready for the next one?
I think so.
All right. EA to lay off 5% of its workforce. Taryn Adams says what we're all thinking. So this is a combination of one that was given to us and one that you had that was the Dwarf Fortress creator, or one of the Dwarf Fortress creators.
Yeah.
Saying what we're thinking.
So, I mean, is there much to say about EA laying off 5% of their workforce? Because, right?
Yeah, fucking more layoffs. So sick of this. I hate it. I hate it. I'm happy, like, just, you know, going back to the VGL Awards from this year, like, layoffs were on there, and I hated it, and I didn't want to see any more of it, but I knew that they were coming, and I'm happy to see unionization on the rise. Just go back and listen to that episode, and you'll get my full views on this. EA sucks. I hate them. Screw them. Quit buying companies. All big companies of any kind, video game or otherwise, quit buying small companies and then shutting them down because you either don't want competition or you just want to cannibalize them. That's bad. I'm going to go get the water spritzer and I'm going to squirt you. Bad. I'm going to hit you with the naughty stick.
I mean, there's just so many amazing game studios in the EA graveyard.
Yeah.
But anyway, to have something positive to talk about, Tarn?
I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Tarn, sorry. The font on PC Gamer makes it look like Tam, because it's T-A-R-N. So, Tarn Adams doesn't mince words when it comes to the dire state of the game industry. And this is a quote, by the way. 3 to 4 years from now, what are Dwarf Fortress sales looking like? Pondered Adams in a chat with PC Gamer. What kind of decisions do I have to make with burn rates and all that stuff? Considering the possibility of making those hard decisions some day down the line, Tarn wondered if the experience would give him more empathy for the people that lay people off. No, I don't fucking think so, he concluded. They can all eat shit. And I think they're horrible, and I think they're bad people. Oh.
Absolutely. You got it. Full stop.
Mind you, this is the same person that coded, accidentally coded at cats to get drunk by licking booze off their fur.
Mm-hmm.
And his community has some rather interesting projects that they've done over the years. Probably my favorite is still the Super Soldier Project, where they lock children in a room with a bunch of ducks and basically try to make a super soldier that's just completely made of scar tissue.
Interesting.
Dwarf Fortress is amazing.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out.
Let's see. These decisions, they don't sound practical. They sound like they're all driven by greedy, greedy people trying to make some sort of venture capital thing work out. There is the stench at the top of things where the reasons people get laid off is because of funding structures and bad incentives and stupidity. That they shouldn't fire because the company will fall apart. But I guess maybe it helps some on its bottom line somewhere or gets the right air inside the right golden parachute. Is there any other reasons not to love him, right?
There's got to be something. We should find some more if we looked hard enough. We could find more reasons to love. I like loving people, so.
I know Dwarf Fortress didn't really resonate with you, but maybe the Steam version would, with a better user interface?
Yeah. There's a chance. A good chance. I do intend to try it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the list.
But I kind of wanted, you know, like a little positive note. And having one of the game developers I really idolize just go come out swinging. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the only way it'd be better if it was like Yahtzee or something.
I can't. When was this article, or when did the Dwarf Fortress man?
It was posted today.
Okay, this will probably be showing up. Speaking of the Jimquisition from earlier, this will probably show up on the Jimquisition or on Podquisition. Either way, I'm very happy to hear them talk about it.
Speaking of Valve companies, we have a bit of Warner Brothers news to kind of round things out.
Yay.
So,
yes.
Yeah, let's just dive into the big meaty one. Warner Brothers discusses the volatile AAA console market and will lean more into free-to-play and mobile gaming. Oh, joy, right? Mind you, Warner Brothers, they had one of the big breakout titles last year in the Hogwarts game, didn't they?
Yeah, let's talk about how stupid this is. Because what they did, right, the lesson to learn from anyone on the outside who looks at the video game industry and sees what's happening. And, you know, let's just set aside my feelings about the creator of the Wizard World and the Wizard game and all of that jazz. Just set those aside and just look at it as a pure, like, exercise in business acumen. You look at this market, and there's, you know, this oversaturation and this type of game, and this other type of game that everyone says nobody wants anymore actually sold 22 million copies and was one of, if not the best-selling games of the year before. The lesson that you should learn from that is, oh, there still is a big market for well-made games potentially set in popular IP. We could do a sequel with this, or we could make another game, some other game that is a well-made single-player experience. And what they went was, herder, let's take the Wizard universe and push it into a live service game. Let's try that. Maybe the Wizard universe, maybe Harry Potter can make our live service game work. And honestly, it might. That's the thing.
Well, remember,
Harry Potter
had one.
They had a Harry Potter live service game?
Well, the collectible card role-playing game on mobile.
Wait.
They already have one on Android and iOS.
Right, but I mean, what I hear them saying that they want to do from this is that they want to take, like, the Harry Potter, you know, like let's just take what I read from this, unless I've misread something or I missed something. What this says to me is, let's take Hogwarts Legacy and make it into a live service game. Hogwarts Legacy 2 will be a live service title. That's what I see them doing here. And Harry Potter, like I said, Harry Potter might be big enough to sustain a small live service title, but I just don't see it.
Well,
I don't.
Take an example almost at random. Let's say they take Harry Potter and put it onto, let's pick a mobile game again, almost at random, Pokemon Go.
Yeah, I was gonna say press X to doubt. I'm pressing X to doubt.
It combined them and made a game that definitely didn't release in 2019 and has already shut down.
Yeah,
right?
there were several of those, a bunch of those after Pokemon.
Although
after
COVID
the Pokemon
definitely didn't help that because it, kind of restricted movement, but. It wasn't healthy to begin with, from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it shut down in 2022, so, you know, that's when things have pretty much opened back up.
As far as I know, Pokemon Go is the only one of those games that is, like, super duper successful. And I think that's
like RPG ones, but it's more about just movement instead of, like, certain locations.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, Pokemon is just... It's Pokemon. Pokemon is Pokemon.
Yeah. I mean, let's look at 2023 for Warner Brothers games. All right. Let's have some fun. All right. Okay. So in February was their first published title, Hogwarts Legacy. All right. And they also released Harry Potter Magic Awakened, which was a mobile based title. That's the collectible role playing card game one. Then they released Mortal Kombat 1. Right.
Back.
And Mortal Kombat Onslaught on mobile. Then they did the remaster of Batman Arkham Asylum City and Night. And that was it. If we go back a little bit further, though, hey, they got Back for Blood, huh? This year they have Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
With Multiverses coming back out, which that's also a weird situation there.
Multiverses, fine. There's some weirdness to it, but whatever. Suicide Squad is the one that like really gets me. Like Suicide Squad as a movie was a flop, both of them. It's like, why did you think a video game would be successful? Like, it has its fans, to be sure. It has its fans. Like, and Suicide Squad in the DC comics and the animated series, a lot more interesting. But, yeah, I don't get it. I don't get why they thought that would be successful.
I think if Suicide Squad was done differently, if a game, I haven't watched the movie, it could be interesting. But the thing is that they made it the most bland game possible.
Yeah.
I mean, they have characters that have very unique arsenals, but they make everybody shooty, a big shooter person.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing.
Where changing characters are just changing your movement style.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing also, like, Make a game that's good. Like, just make a good game. And yes, making a good game does not necessarily guarantee that you're going to have success in the market. But for someone like Warner Bros., who has got the marketing budget and access to all those IPs and everything, start with just making a good game, and I bet you'll sell a bunch. You know, just try that.
And what kind of really stinks with the Suicide Squad game is that it kind of goes back and tarnishes the Arkham Asylum trilogy or quadrilogy, yeah. Depending on how you view the one that was made by Rocksteady. Where, yeah, that's the Batman that they kill in the game. Spoiler, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm sure you really care, but.
Oh, no.
But just left such a bad taste. It feels like in poor taste, especially with Kevin Conroy dying, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, based off what I've seen of the Suicide Squad game, I don't think there was any good taste to be had.
No, I don't think so either. Anyways, yeah, I mean, that's the big one. And they're, learning the wrong lessons, making definitely poor business decisions, which are probably going to result in layoffs.
Yeah, but see, if they throw enough mayflies out, eventually they'll have something that lasts a little bit longer and makes all the money, right?
Yeah, that's the hope, I guess.
Because if they keep throwing out, you know, these disposable mobile games, eventually they'll have one that's scraped together decently enough and monetized, not quite so egregiously that people will actually fucking play the thing.
Yeah.
There's a reason why I don't play mobile games anymore. They feel like they're all trash now. I've tried. I've gone through through Google Play, and it feels like it's a waste of my time. And it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other flip side of this is that they're also wiping out Adult Swim games for whatever reason.
Yep, which is what I was about to segue to. Well done.
Woo.
I'm ruining it. But yeah, they are...
I have not found any articles talking about why. If there's some sort of licensing thing going on or what. They're saying we're wiping out this back catalog for... And fuck you.
Yep, they're going to be removed from... removed from sale... within 60 days of, I guess, whenever the interview was done for this article, which was from a couple weeks ago. So, sounds like, I mean, 60 days, March, April, May, sometime in May, the Adult Swim collection is going to be pulled off of Steam.
Yeah, I don't get why.
Yeah, it says it's being quote-unquote retired from Steam and the PlayStation Store. Either they're just going to stop selling it, which feels the most possible, or it's going to turn up for sale somewhere else down the line. But I mean, a lot of these games, like I had never heard of. I mean, the Adult Swim collection on Steam, Super House of Dead Ninjas, Super Puzzle Platformer Deluxe, Fist Puncher, Volgar the Viking, Sound Dodger Plus, Westerado, Double Barrel, Obletus, Mega Coin Squad, Duck Game, Zinzinzik, I think, is how you say that. Wasted, Traverser, Headlander, Rise and Shine, Desync, Small Radios, Big Televisions.
Battleship Brigade.
And then a couple of DLCs. That's all that's listed in the bundle. The Adult Swim Games bundle on Steam.
There's a few that were published by them, but are no longer published by them. So some people are saying that Battleship Brigade, Death's Gambit, Glimmer Grove, Rain World, Volgan the Viking, and Westerlandero, Double Barreled are most likely safe. Because they're no longer being published by them.
Okay.
But, yeah, the fact that we're having to try to figure this out, right?
Yeah, the ones that they've got listed in, I'll call the Adult Swim Bundle. I mean, that's what it's called, the Adult Swim Bundle on Steam. Which says it has all the Adult Swim games in it. The only ones that I really had heard of from this are Headlander.
Oh, there's the guy.
Oh, excuse me. Headlander and Duck Game.
That game is supposed to be a really fun party game.
And Desync. I've heard of Desync. But that's it.
I actually have Desync. Let's see. I have Super House of the Dead Ninjas. Headlander. Rise and Shine. Desync. Small Radios, Big Televisions. So I have a few of them. But I don't want to throw, you know. $94 to finish the bundle.
Yeah.
It always stinks to. Okay, we're not hugely enthusiastic about the games, but it's more the principle of the thing. They're pulling games for no damn reason.
Yeah, and like there are people who are hugely enthusiastic about these games. Like a lot of them are overwhelmingly positive or very positive on Steam. You know, so even if the communities that like them are small, there's still communities that really like at least a decent chunk of these games. So to deny future growth to the community.
Well, there's always piracy.
There is always piracy. I mean, piracy is the answer. It's not theft, it's reclamation. As James Stephanie Sterling likes to say. Not theft, it's reclamation. I agree. Reclaim what's rightfully yours that they're trying to take away from you. Yeah. Okay.
I think that's it for that. Does that bring us to the end of our list?
Yeah, that brings us to the end of the list. Woo. So, hey, buddy. Where can people get in touch with us and send us stuff?
Well, hopefully it's not the touch you keep trying to do to me. You could send us an email, vglpodcast@gmail.com. You could drop by the Twitter, which is vglpodcast over there. And yes, I'm still calling it Twitter. Yes, I'm dead naming it. Come at me, bro. I actually don't, because I don't want to be downwind of you, because I imagine there's a contact tie. or at least a stank from all the skunkweed. Or you can drop by our Discord, which you can find a link to that at the top of vglpodcast.podbean.com.
And why don't you hit him with your socials, Rage?
Well, I don't really have that many these days. Still check the Blue Burb every so often, so Gaming CR over there. Or if you wish to be my friend on Steam, Caffeine Rage. And you've been?
I have been Jared. You find me on Twitter at JMA4707. And the same over on Blue Sky, although I too have been engaging less and less with social media recently. that trend may be continuing as I further solidify myself into my old man, early old man phase. But regardless, if you say hi, I'll say hi back. And then obviously on our Discord.
And then yell at him to get off your lawn.
That's right. Get off my lawn.
So did you hear back from the person? Before we forget.
I had already forgotten. I haven't gone to check. Let's go check.
Because we did say, at the end of the show.
You're right. No, they did not respond. Sad day.
Which, once again, if you wish to contact us, vgelpodcast@gmail.com, with your letters, voicemails, game-related topics, tweet them to us, vgelpodcast, or drop by the Discord, which you can find a link to that over at the top of vgelpodcast.podbean.com. And if you wish to throw us a few dollary dues to help support us, you can do so, patreon.com/vglpodcast. Our lovely, lovely patrons have made this madness possible. Our intro and outro music is On the Ground by Kevin McLeod. You can find his work over at incompetech.com. And
as always, as his lovely music starts to roll across my voice, bye-bye now.
See ya.
Bye-bye.